The expressed views of the guests on this podcast are theirs alone and not necessarily endorsed by the host, TWBC, or any associated sponsor. Conversations that are robust yet balanced, on point and to the point. You are listening to The Talk of Tournament Water Ski. This is the TWBC podcast. And now, here's your host, Tony Lightfoot.
Well, greetings once again and welcome to this next edition of the TWBC podcast. I'm Tony Lightfoot and glad to have the pleasure of your company. And this is another Swiss Pro Slalom special, and joining me here and getting ready for the events which will start tomorrow morning is my good friend from Bumpus, Virginia. His name is Corey Vaughn. How you doing, sir?
I'm great, Tony. I'm happy to be down here. I love skiing at Swiss, and I'm just taking my first sets with no neoprene, so being in that warm water is feeling really good.
Yep, I'm sure it does. You ski up in a long wetsuit up there in Virginia, or do you dry suit it a little bit?
I have given up the dry suit. I've got a really nice full wetsuit that I started the season with, and then I've kind of got the tiers. I got the spring suit. We can get down to that, and then I have had some sets in just the top, and I've even had two sets in just the John top, like the tank top one. But we've been wearing some rubber up there, so to jump in and just feel warm and feel sunshine when you get up, man, and just Swiss, the place here, the water's incredible, the drivers are incredible. It's pretty nice.
All right, then. You've already competed this season, Moomba Masters. How did that go for you?
Yeah, I mean, it was a little up and down. I was pretty happy to get good training in for the event, and I skied decently. The Yara is always a bit tricky, but I put myself in the second spot going into the finals. I had pretty high hopes there. I thought maybe I could climb up and snatch one, but then it unfortunately went just the other way, and I finished fourth, which was a bit of a letdown given that I had gotten my expectations so high, but not bad. And I think my real highlight of that trip was someone that I coached, Soli Stanger. She got second place in the junior women's slalom, and we were staying together with her and her mom, and so to celebrate that was pretty cool.
That's always nice when someone that you've coached does that well right at the same tournament that you're involved in.
Yeah, it was really special. I wanted to live up to it and do at least the same, but I guess I'll have to go earn that out there this season.
So how many times have you skied at Moomba?
Oh, this was maybe, I want to say this was the fourth one.
Does it get any easier? Or I mean, I'm sure you went there for the first time. What was it? How many years ago was the first one?
That first one might have been 2011, I want to say.
Yeah, that's a good while ago.
That's a while back. I'd say it has gotten easier just to understanding what the travel is going to mean, having some sense of the jet lag. And I know more people there now. I mean, this year I stayed with Wayne Bryant because of the KD connection. And so having somebody on the ground there that I knew that was helping me, that sure made it a lot easier. I met some great people out in Mawala. So I think it has gotten easier, yes. I mean, the Yara River, I don't know that it's necessarily gotten easier, but you know a little bit more about what to expect and how to frame your feelings about approaching it.
And I mean, the Yara River, I mean, the conditions are basically change every single season. You know, you don't know whether you're going to get a tail current or tailwind off the dock, or a head current, headwind off the dock, or combinations of the two, you know, and whether the tide's in or going out, you know what I mean? So I don't know if you can rationalize this or kind of describe that to the folks that have no clue about what it's like skiing on a river, but maybe you can.
Well, I think you said it, you know, you called to mind all those factors, and you basically do have to be ready for anything, because the other thing that's unique is it can change throughout the event, like throughout the round. You know, what's happening at the start of men's slalom, if you're watching somebody 10 skiers before you and you're saying, okay, the wind is going this way, the current's going this way, and you know, I can see the rollers look like this, and you kind of, if you think that that's how it's going to be when you go, you might be making a mistake, because the wind, especially this year, we had that in the prelim round. It was seemed to come up and down and from different directions, and you know, the current, like you said, it's affected by the tides. It'll be coming in and it'll seem to be going fast, but then as it starts to get to its maximum, it'll start to slow down. So you really have to use your first two passes, you know, going each direction once to assess how that's going to feel. And if you're able to make those successfully, then as you get to your harder passes, you at least know how to factor the variables and accordingly.
And those opening two passes aren't particularly easy for a lot of skiers. They're 32 and 35 off back-to-back.
No, that's right. I mean, especially when the conditions are a little bit challenging, it's no gimmies, and you see that every time. You know, there's always a great skier somewhere along the way who's going to get taken out by something weird at the 32 or 35, and I know it's happened to me over there on the Yara too. So, you know, so that's at the end of the day. I was a little disappointed with the fourth place finish, but I also had the perspective of, it's the Yara, and it could have gone much worse, so let's be grateful that that it went okay, and then let's try to build on that.
Were you around whenever that King Current came through one year?
I was around, but I don't... you know what? Yeah, maybe that... I think that's the year that I missed the 35 that I'm talking about. I thought the right move was going to be to go off the dock at 35 to get 38 coming back, and then 39 from the dock direction... And that was in the semifinals. And then I didn't make my opener. I didn't run the 35 off the dock, so clearly it was not the right call.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely one of those tournaments that has its quirks and has its you know, unusual things going about it. But returning to Virginia, I mean, Moomba's in March, so returning to Virginia, it's still pretty cold. It's still not very pleasant to ski in. So getting back to training for this season, how did that work?
Yeah, so when I got back from Moomba, I'd say I was about 2 weeks off the water. It was just really cold, and I was spending time, you know, I was working out in the gym, trying to prepare myself that way, and then after about 2 weeks, right at the very end of March, we opened up the ski school, and even though it wasn't exactly inviting to get out there, we decided it was time to go, and so we started skiing on March 30th, and knowing that I'd be coming down here for the Swiss Pro and the subsequent Masters Qualifier tournaments, it has given my month of April a lot of focus and intensity that if I weren't coming here to compete right now, there's a lot of days that I would have elected not to ski just because it was harsh and cold and dark. And but when you have goals and you got competitions coming up, you just got to push through on those days.
Now, you've got your wife who's skiing, a brand new family, almost pretty much a brand new family. I mean, obviously a lot of your thoughts are with them whenever you go out and ski, you know. I mean, and I'm sure that they're going to be watching the webcast as well, you know. I mean, how gratifying is that?
Yeah, well, thank you for bringing that up, because I'm grateful that my wife and my family are so supportive that they, you know, send me out to go do this and understand that I want to be here and have such a strong passion for this, because it does represent sacrifice, especially on my wife's part, to be home with our son. And it's a sacrifice for me to be away from the both of them too. So it certainly makes it gratifying and validating when the results are good. Maybe when the results aren't as good, it's kind of like, geez, you know, I took this time away and I didn't really get what I wanted out of it, so that can be also a challenge. So it's all the more reason to put in the legwork and try to do what I can to make sure that the outcome is as close to what I want as possible.
Now, you mentioned that. I mean, your wife drives you, doesn't she?
Yeah, that's right. She's my number one training partner, and I'm so thankful for that. I love that we ski together, and you know, maybe sometime in the future, it'll be with my son as well. I mean, he has skied too, which is super cool, but he's just going to be turning 3 in June, so the future will tell.
Yeah, that's yeah, that sounds like a pretty cool deal. You know, I mean, I bet that birthday party is gonna be pretty good.
He actually understands about having a birthday this year, and that he's gonna have a birthday party, and he's been talking about who he wants to invite, and so it's been fun to see him get excited for it this time around. So yeah, I think we're gonna have to live up to that. We're gonna have to throw him a real banger.
Well, who would he have on his list? Would he have like Will Asher or Joel Poland or Josh Bryant? Maybe, I don't know.
Well, let's see who in the pro skiers does he really know. He likes. He does seem to like everybody that he meets. He you know who he really likes? I think he's got a crush on Paige Reaney. If he had a choice, I think he'd. Sorry, Robert. He would like to invite Paige Reaney to his birthday party from the Pro Tour. But, you know, he's got his little school friends. They're going to come. And then, of course, family. But, yeah, this is like the first year where it's not just like our family. He's got his buddies. He goes to the volleyball gym with my wife when she plays. And he's got like the friends from the other kids at the volleyball gym. So, yeah, you know, it's we're going to really have to... We're getting into that birthday stage. That's what we got to do. Cool cake and balloons and everything.
All right. So, how is your schedule shaping up for this summer beyond this competition? I mean, you mentioned the Masters qualifiers. There are two of those. If I'm guessing that if you can make it through on the first one, you probably won't do the second one.
Correct. Yeah, I mean, plan A would really be to get the job done on the first one and be able to head back home. My wife is flying down here actually on Wednesday to watch the first qualifier, and then we're going to ski the Swiss Spring Classic, the record tournament, this Sunday here, and then hopefully we're both going home on Monday. That would really be fantastic, just to get to be together, for me to get back to the ski school and to just train and get my sights set on Masters. If that doesn't happen, then I plan to stay down here for the second qualifier at Travers. And then hopefully qualify in that one. And if that happens, then I will probably stay in Florida just for the 1 week interval before the Masters and drive north to Georgia instead of driving all the way back home to Virginia only to do some laundry and drive all the way back to Georgia. So that would mean being gone from May 1st through Memorial Day weekend. I really don't want to. I'd like to go home in between and be with my family and be at my ski school.
That's some incentive going forward, isn't it?
It is. It also maybe is a little bit of pressure. I'm trying to find that healthy balance of incentive, not pressure.
All right, then. So beyond those, the Masters, the Lake 38, possibly?
Lake 38, I'm not going to go because it's the week after the Masters and the week before we're holding a big event at our lake, our own tournament. And it's not a pro tournament yet, although someday we hope to make it that way and have the TWBC there. So
sounds nice.
Yeah, that'll be down the road a little ways. But anyway, it's just too much to fit in, and I'm sorry that I can't be there. But Bradley Gibbons, who's working for me right now, holding the fort down, he'll be going to Lake 38, so somebody from Bumpus will be showing up there, which is cool. So no Lake 38, but then, and I don't have an ability to get started with Marrakesh, unfortunately. I'd love to be there and some of the stuff in late June, but basically I'm going to pick back up with the tour with San Gervasio and then and Caiaphas.
Family's going there with you, I'm guessing.
Amelia is going to come to Caiaphas, and we're going to, you know, enjoy Greece together. It's going to be our first extended trip since having Seth. He's going to stay with my mom.
Oh, okay.
And we're going to be like, you know, just a duo, which is going to be rare and exciting and I think really fun. So, yeah, we'll do that. And then, of course, once the tour moves back over to the U.S., I'm going to try to catch everything through the late summer and fall over here.
All right, then. I don't know whether you made the statement or not, or whether someone else did. But from what I understand, is this essentially going to be your last summer doing these tournaments?
Yeah, no, it's me that's kind of put that talk out there. But the plan is not for this to be the last one. This would be I would be this year and one more year, you know, one more Worlds year in particular.
So wherever the Worlds happens to be, which means no one knows where it's going to be yet.
That's right. Yeah.
Which is actually quite sad, actually.
I'd like to know. That would be, I'm sure everyone would. But yeah, this would be maybe second to last season. just for these reasons that we've been mentioning, you know, there's a lot of push and pull between family time, pro skiing, running a business, and I want to do this at the best that I can, and I want to carve out time and energy to put towards this pursuit, but I can't, I don't think I can do that over and over, year after year, and frankly, with age, I'm going to have to put in more time to try to stay at this level, so I want to get to my pinnacle the best that I can possibly be, you know, this season, and then build on that even to next season, and know that I've, you know, squeezed every bit of juice out of myself that I can get, and wherever that takes me is where it's going to be. But I realize that I can't sustain the type of pace and the type of lifestyle that I'm doing now for too much longer. And also, look, I've had a very long career, and I've enjoyed, you know, all of it. And so I have to be thankful for that, and I know you don't get to do it forever. And I think one thing that's great about our sport that was pointed out to me is that I can enjoy a bit of a soft retirement. It's not like a baseball team or a soccer team where you're either on with a contract for the season or you're not. You know,
you can be like a NASCAR driver where you don't do the four cup events, but you do like the major ones such as the Daytona 500 or the Coca-Cola 600 or those types of deals.
Yeah, I feel very thankful that I can do a bit of picking and choosing. You know, I probably, you know, may not be traveling to Moomba, you know, and spending all the time in the winter to train and all that kind of thing. But, you know, when there are tournaments on the East Coast here in particular, or going out to California with the family, we love doing that trip as a family, and we have great friends out there. You know, that's still very attractive, and I, you know, hopefully don't just go off of a cliff and lose like a full pass or something. So, you know, yeah, you'll see me.
And I'm sure Wayne Bryant would welcome you back again down under.
Yes, yeah, I'd love to go back. See, that's what I wanted. I really wanted to, like, get on that podium or get the win this year and seal up a great Moomba success story, but I may have to go back now because I didn't quite do it.
All right, talking about KD, tell us about the ski you're on.
Well, Tony, it's the best ski I've ever been on. You know, it kind of came out of the blue to me just about 1 year ago, just slightly over a year ago right now, and I was opening my mind to testing things. I never thought about the KD because you don't really see them that much over here in the States. You do in Australia, but
you see more KD trick skis than you see slalom skis.
That's right, you do. You see the KD trick skis, and obviously they're building the reputation all on their own. But I know, you know, the slalom ski, the concept really comes from Terry Winter, who is obviously just a fantastic skier, incredibly knowledgeable, and I think, you know, because he's a little underspoken, he doesn't say a whole lot, people don't realize how much he really knows. But he's been around through the evolution of the sport. He's started with hand driving, he's been through perfect pass, he's been in his prime at zero off, and he's seen the evolution of the equipment and been part of it for a number of companies. You know, I'm also riding his boot, the T-Factor, so I'm really kind of on a Terry Winter concept setup. And
yeah, that's something we need to point out, because a lot of skiers are running hard shells, and you're maybe like one about maybe, at least so far in the Swiss Pro Slalom, you're probably about three or four of you actually run T-Factors.
Yeah, you can see Nate, Dane, and me. I'm not sure who else, but you know, I was riding a Radar Vapor boot, which I loved. I went from a Reflex to that. And then with the changes they made to the boot, I wasn't sure if I wanted to keep riding it, so I tried a T-Factor. And I just found it so easy to switch to, and I liked what it did. And I know that it's going to be remaining in production, so I just kind of stuck with that.
They're pretty hard to get hold of, the T-Factors, aren't they?
Oh, I don't know. I haven't had any trouble with that, and I'm going to try to make sure that I can get them out to other people who need them. So, I don't know. You might know more about that than me. But returning to the KD ski, you know, I had the opportunity to try one. I didn't really know what to do with it, so I called up Terry Winter. I said, "Hey, where do I set up the fin? Where do I put the boot? I'm not familiar with this ski." And so he told me, he said, "Just put your normal fin numbers that you always like. Put that on there. Put the boot at 29 3/4, and let's start with that." So I said, okay, and I'll be honest, I was skeptical just because I hadn't seen anybody ride one except Terry. He looked great on it, but he looks great on anything. So you know, I jumped on it, and it started proving itself to me really, really quickly. The first set on it was great. Second set on it was the best set I'd had of all of last spring. And, you know, I think one thing that shows is that I have not made a fin or boot change since the first time I set up the ski. I'm running the exact same setup now that
that's
I was
unheard
then.
Of, isn't it?
And that's not to say it's the best, but the ski accommodates, you know, I think a wide range of setups, and I know I'm confident with that those fin numbers. I've run them on other skis, so I've just stuck with it. I am going to do some experimenting this spring after, I guess, the Masters, hopefully, and see if there's something better out there. But I mean, it just works. It's so stable at the finish of the turn. It's so forgiving if I go to the back, if I jump on the front, if I go to the inside. It seems to be there for me with everything I need.
And this is a stock slalom ski that anyone can go into a pro shop and get, you know. So, I mean, if that's the ski that he sent you and you don't have to do too much to the settings, then that's a confidence boost whenever you go travel, you know, because, I mean, if your ski gets damaged, you can probably feel confident knowing that the backup ski is going to ski just as well.
Well, it's very funny that you bring that up, Tony, because we may be finding out about exactly that tomorrow. I had an incident yesterday where my ski got some damage, not from skiing on it, from actually something that happened on land. And I have a backup ski that I sent down here as a demo to someone. And after we get off of this podcast, what I'm going to be doing is going to flex test my ski and then going to track down the backup ski that I had sent out as a demo, and very likely putting my boots on that ski and entering the tournament tomorrow on a ski that I haven't ridden.
Wow.
And trusting that the quality control and the consistency of the ski is going to be there for me when I jump on it in the first round of the tournament tomorrow. So that gives you something to talk about when I'm out there.
It certainly will. I'm making mental notes of that right now. But one thing I noticed is your rear toe plate is elevated. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, so that's something I've been doing for a little while. I realized that actually my left leg is a little bit shorter than my right, which is my front leg. And not only that, but most people, their front boot, whether it's a hard shell or, you know, a hybrid or a rubber boot, in most cases the padding and the plate make that front foot sit a little higher off of the ski than your toe plate. People that have double boots, maybe it's equal, but those of us who are riding a kicker, a lot of times the little rubber pad on the kicker doesn't get your foot to the same height as the footbed in your front boot. So between those two things, I think I really had a discrepancy. My back leg was shorter and the toe plate was closer to the ski, or the pad was closer. And so I just wanted to get my feet to a level position so that my hips could be in a more level position. And so I was experimenting with some homemade pieces of plastic that I cut up and put under there that were a little bit, you know, rough, but they did the job. But actually, I don't know if I'm supposed to mention this or not. I'm just gonna throw it
go
out
for
there.
It.
Yeah, well, hopefully it's the right thing. I got Mads Krau of Ski Doc. You know, he can make all kinds of stuff, and he made for me really nice 3D printed lift plates that are the exact shape of a rear toe plate. And, you know, they all got these nice honeycomb cutouts, so they're nice and flexible. And he made them in five different thicknesses. So a quarter inch, a third of an inch, a half an inch, two-thirds of an inch, and three-quarters of an inch, so I could play with how much I elevated that foot. And I can tell you, each time I put a different one on there, I could tell that it affected, you know, I could very easily feel the difference in the characteristic of the ski. I'd say more pronounced than, you know, a fin change of about a 5 to 10 thousandths. It was clear that it made a difference. So that gave me the opportunity to play with those different sizes and find the exact one that put me on level, or it put me in the right configuration to perform the best and feel the most symmetrical side to side. So that was I think that it may turn into, it's not something out there yet, that's why I'm not sure if I'm supposed to be talking about it, but I think it could have the makings of a marketable product, because a lot of people, I see them come through my ski school, they've got
They've got the hard shell boots, then the front foot is already elevated enough to where it would have a significant impact upon the skiing, so to level up the back is gonna help.
That's right. And if your front foot's higher, it's kind of tilting you back. You're standing on a slant. You're just by default going to be standing too much on the back foot because it's downhill. So we kind of want to get that to level so there is no hill, and then you're more likely to stay balanced and on the middle of the ski like you want to.
Now, in the few years, way before the hard shell boots, I recall that when Duval skis were produced, they had the opposite way of doing it, where they lowered the top of the ski to where the plate would actually be underneath the surface, in effect, you know, altering how you would change your edge and how much you would crank over, you know. So I mean, it's that kind of thing.
Yeah, I kind of recall that. I almost want to say like the old school, like KD 7000s and CR7s.
Yeah, I rode that ski.
Yeah, they kind of had something similar to that too. So I didn't ride those. I did have a Duval back in the day, but it was a flat top sheet. But you know, it's things like that. I'm not a big fin tweaker, which is obvious that I'm still riding the same settings of the first time I ever tried the ski, so that shows you how much I don't fiddle around.
That might actually be your saving grace with what's just happened.
That's true, too. Yeah, there's not have too many variables to figure out, but I do like things that are a little more concrete. Maybe I have too much of a layman's way of looking at things, but, you know, physically changing the height of that foot, that back foot, it really makes a difference, and I can really clearly, in my mind, understand why. And I think that's why I like it. I think that back to the KD ski, some of the things that I like about it, I think I can visually see with my eye, from a fairly layman's perspective, features of the ski that produce the outcomes that I like. Like it has a very unique tail shape, and I think I can kind of picture in my mind why that makes it ride better at the finish of the turn for me and coming into the buoy for me. It's got a really sharp sidewall turn, and I think I can really feel how that gives me a good cross course speed and hold. It's got the little step up in the front of the ski, like Radar also used to run a step under one of their models to help the ski from not biting too much if you come forward on it. Again, I can see it, so I understand what it does, and I do feel like it does what it's designed to. So, you know, I'm not a wizard of ski design, thank goodness. You know, Terry Winter and Wayne Bryant, they've figured out some things that are beyond my pay grade. And then we're just going to try to keep making common sense adaptations from what we know is a good baseline.
Some common sense solutions, you know, and that's something new for those guys in Ball of Spray Land and John Horton, you know, for him to try, you know. Maybe it's the revolution that's yet to take control of slalom skiing.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I mean, I think the thing that's cool is that because the KD hasn't been widely exposed in the U.S., a lot of people just haven't had experience, you know, on the ski yet, so we don't have to make big changes. Like, if you're one of the other big ski companies, good, HO, Radar, and you name it, anybody, you know, they've had so many skis out there, everyone's kind of tried them. You have to come up with something new and make an improvement, whereas for us, most people haven't tried it, and so it's kind of an unknown secret weapon, I think, that's out there. And so our goal at the moment is just to produce high-quality versions that really work and that we can get people on, and we know that they're going to have a good experience on them. And then once enough people kind of get on that ski and have a hunger for a new generation, you know, then we can work towards producing that for them.
All right, then. So in the background there, another... Benjamin Stadelbaugh's taking a slant ride like he hasn't skied here enough times before. But yeah, he's getting ready to go and try and... compete against you guys tomorrow. But we went in a little bit deep in the weeds there with the KD ski, so obviously you're encouraged to go to your local KD dealer and give that one a try. But as we put a bow at the end of this podcast episode, thanks to Corey Bourne for being a part of this. But where do you see the sport, and where do you see yourself in relation to the sport in about 5 years?
That's a great question, Tony. I'll tell you what, I am very optimistic, and it's largely because of the work that the TWBC is doing. It's both the TWBC and the Water Ski Pro Tour. I think those two forces are bringing pro skiing to a new place, and I think for the first time in my career, these last couple of years show me that we're right at the precipice of breaking through into something bigger. I can see a next level sponsorship coming. I can see this type of broadcast being picked up by a much wider, broader mainstream audience, that bringing a different level of sponsorship to the events. I can see a virtuous cycle coming. At least it's possible with the track that we're on, with the momentum that we have. And I think, you know, when you talk about the five-year plans, I don't see myself maybe at my personal athletic peak in 5 years, but I tell you what, I would really like to be involved. I love sitting in right here at the booth with you at events. I'd love to continue doing that. Mm-hmm. I'd love to continue, if there's some way that I can help with the Water Ski Pro Tour, you know, in the effort to get endorsements, sponsorship deals, whatever legwork needs to be done. I want this sport to grow and to take off. And I think if we grow that top level, the pro skiing side, and create excitement for the juniors, for them to look up to people and watch, and for the spectators in general, I think that's going to help the whole sport grow from the base, you know, from the public water skiers and the recreational skiers. I think we need to lead the charge out there with the media and the top performances, and then let it flow down through the pyramid.
All right, then. So that was Mr. Peace, Love, and Water Ski himself, Mr. Corey Vaughn. Any thanks and acknowledgements before we put a bow on this?
Of course, to my wife, Amelia, A number one, my training partner, my support system for every single thing. Couldn't be doing this without her and her support. And then, just shout out to my son, Seth, and my friends and family that are watching, my guys at ski school. Thank you all for holding it down, and let's have some fun tomorrow.
All right, then. That was Corey Vaughn here on this latest edition of the TWBC podcast. And for those of you that are wanting to support the podcast, you can reach out to me, podcast@waterskibroadcasting.com, and we'll see if we can work out something to where you can actively support the TWBC podcast by way of sponsorship. But until next time, this is Tony Lightfoot saying ciao for now.
Thank you for listening to the TWBC podcast. Be sure to check out our website at waterskibroadcasting.com. Links to our presence on major social media platforms can be found there, as well as updates to our webcast and this podcast. Duplication or rebroadcasting of this broadcast without written consent of TWBC is prohibited. Subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform and be sure to join us next time for the next edition of the TWBC podcast.